Good evening and welcome to Shattered Lives, a lively, educational, and issues-driven radio show designed to tell another side of the story, to focus on and humanize crime victims, to enlighten and shine the spotlight on organizations and service providers, and to assist those who walk the path with us. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, your host and my co-host from Imagine Up Publicity, President Delilah Jones joins me as co-host this evening. So I say welcome, everyone. Welcome from across the nation. Welcome from Connecticut, where I'm from. Welcome from Myrtle Beach, where Delilah is. And it's a pleasure to have you this evening and every Saturday evening. And I just want to say thank you so much. Before we bring on our various esteemed and stellar guests, I have a couple of announcements, and then we'll get right to it because we have a very unique and interesting show this evening. I just want to say thank you so much to everyone. It's been a whirlwind of activity the past couple of weeks with many rewarding things going on, and one of the major things that has been going on, if you've seen Delilah's website and mine, is that very fortunately, after we had the parole hearing for the perpetrator of my dad's murder, after many, many weeks of consultation and emails back and forth and a lot of education on both sides, we were able to win a victory of sorts in that we are now able to set policy in the state of Connecticut with regard to people going to parole hearings and not have the victim's family's identity released on the record, whether it be verbally during a victim impact statement or online. And this is a major accomplishment because this had never been brought to the fore. And I just want to say congratulations to everyone. Had it not been for our former state constitutional victim advocate, attorney now in private practice, Michelle S. Cruz, had she not represented our family and kind of helped us navigate this minefield, this never would have happened. And they came out with a press release this week, and I want to thank on the record the current victim advocate, Garvin Ambrose, and Erica Tyndall, who is the commissioner for the Board of Pardons and Paroles. This is just one accomplishment among many that they're hoping to work on down the road. And I have to say that the topic of identity is something that we're talking about with our guests this evening. You know, not only do we want to protect our identities from people who are dangerous, particularly serial murderers such as our perpetrator, but when we encounter crime, we're often hesitant to report that. And Delilah, I want to bring you in here and just say good evening and welcome and thank you so much for joining me each and every week. And this we have as a topic, identity, whether it be at a parole hearing or reporting a crime. And, you know, there are parallels here, aren't there, Delilah?
Oh, absolutely, Dawn. And congratulations to you for making a difference in the state of Connecticut. It's you know, it's one of those things I call paying forward. You've made the way better for other people who will be in that same position. There's no doubt about it. So congratulations to you and to Michelle Cruz and to the current state victim advocate for listening. And I think, you know, you're forging that relationship, and I hope that in the future they will, you know, take other things under consideration and be able to move forward with the progress of them as well.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a good sign that, you know, they were able to take my suggestions and kind of prioritize, and that definitely was one of the
most
important.
Well, you know, there again, it goes to the fact that just because you're not a high-powered attorney or a legislator or you know, you're little lady justice, but you can get things done. So it's a nice example for other people out there, you know, that don't think that they can make a difference. They definitely can. It can be done. So you've kind of proven that fact, and congratulations again.
Well, thank you, Delilah, and thank you for all the work you've done to help with this issue, and I know it's important to you as well. And so, you know, upward and onward. And so I just want to say very briefly, if you'd like to get in touch with Michelle, because she specializes in helping crime victims, it's attorney Michelle S. Cruz, and her email can be gotten. It's A-T-T-Y Michelle with two L's, S, Cruz, C-R-U-Z, at yahoo.com. She does have a local number and then an 800 number, the local number 860-415-M-LAW, L-A-W, or 888-781-7054. She also has a Facebook page that is under Michelle, attorney Michelle Cruz. So with that, I've done my commercial and I've done my duty to God and my country, and now it's on to We Tip, Inc. And I have to say, Delilah, I'm very excited about our guest, because I feel like Sue Mandel and I are old friends. We've been crossing paths for weeks and weeks, and they're calling in from the mountains of California up there, just partly relaxing by the fire or something. And so I want to say to Sue Mandel and Susan Aguilar, welcome, ladies. Welcome to Shattered Lives. It's a pleasure to have you this evening. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Donna. Thank you for asking.
We're happy to be here with you.
Oh, yes. The feeling is mutual. And I just want to give a very short thumbnail sketch of your bios, because people can read them online, or if you'd like to expand, that's fine. But let's see. Let's start. Susan Aguilar, in fact, the torch was passed down from her parents about 41 years ago when they started WeTip, and she's the chief executive officer, and she's coordinated the management of hundreds of crime hotline programs and services, and coordinated the WeTip National Conference, and conducted more than 2,000 trainings nationwide for law enforcement officers, corporate security, and how they effectively implement WeTip. Sue Mandel is also with the organization. She's the national manager, and she specializes in creating programs specifically related to corporate security, to schools, to in insurance companies and municipalities. And she's done well over 2,000 trainings. That's why she's so hard to get on the phone. She's always traveling, I think. And she's had over 25 years experience in training, management trainees, and safety procedures and risk management. And she's the director of program development for the last 6 years with this organization. And I understand these ladies are like best friends, and that's the best way to be, to get things done. So with that introduction, just so that we can kind of paint a full picture, Susan, since you are the CEO, can you give us an overview and maybe a history of WeTip, a better history than what I just gave, to kind of give people a backdrop of what we're talking about tonight?
Well, I certainly will give it a try.
Sure.
WeTip has been around since 1972, and we were founded because there were a couple of parents that had between them 8 kids, and those kids seemed to have a whole lot of information about what was going on in the neighborhood, but they didn't want to give information because they were afraid that there would be some kind of retaliation against them. And even though that was back in 1972, it still holds true now, that people will not give information if they are involved with or afraid of the person that they're turning in. And so WeTip was founded based on basic principles that there's a need for people in the communities to have a way to report crime without fearing that they're going to be put on the stand and asked to testify and maybe put their life or the lives of their family members in danger because they are giving information about perhaps gang members or somebody that might be afraid they might be afraid to give information. So basically what WeTip does is we provide a way for people to call in and talk to a live operator 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. So they're never going to get an answering machine, and they're never going to feel like they're going to be put on hold or kind of put by the wayside. They always feel like they have somebody to talk to where they can give information without fear that somebody's going to come and get them or their family members. And
wow.
WeTip has never changed over the course of 41 years. WeTip has never changed. WeTip simply has stood by the mission and vision that we're going to be the most effective crime reporting resource in the nation, and it's going to be totally safe and totally anonymous.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, listen, I'm going to play devil's advocate here and ask you, or maybe Sue, why should I call you and not 911? What's the difference?
Well, if you want to call 911, we certainly don't want to stop you, but you
right.
will be identified if you call the police department, which a lot of folks are okay with that. But when you really fear for your safety or the safety of your loved ones, then
yeah.
being totally anonymous is what's really critical. And there's a huge difference, Donna, between anonymous and confidential.
That's what I understand. That's one of your principles that you wanted to get out. So if you'd like to talk about that now, that's fine.
Actually, because that's what makes WeTip so unique. And
okay,
so
let's talk about that.
Confidential means that somebody knows who you are, but they promise not to tell. That is, unless they get subpoenaed or they change their mind or for a variety of reasons, they do say something. Anonymous means nobody knows. And WeTip is completely anonymous. In our entire 41-year history, we have never had a tipster identified. And that's
mm-hmm.
taking tips everything from property crimes to homicide.
Well, you know, when you call your local police department, on their computer screen, your number, your name comes up automatically. How does it work with regard to calling your number so that even your I don't know what you call them, operators or dispatchers or whatnot, they don't know who you are? How does that work, like, you know, electronically or whatnot?
Well, that's absolutely correct. They answer the phones and they say, this is the WeTip crime hotline. Do not give your name or identify yourself in any way. At that time, they proceed to ask a series of questions that have been designed with the help of law enforcement to obtain the most information possible so that law enforcement can conduct an investigation. But we have no taping, no tracing, no caller ID, so there's no way that anyone can ever get back to the person who gave the call. In fact, if our informant tried to identify themselves, we would tell them we have to disconnect the call because under oath, I have to be able to put my hand on the Bible, and I cannot have any information about the informant. So that's how we keep our people safe. They're always going to talk to a live operator, but even when we pay our cash rewards, our informants are absolutely safe, and we have never had an informant identified.
Oh, okay. I wasn't aware about the cash rewards. That certainly is an incentive. Now what if you've got a person that's involved in domestic violence or intimate partner homicide or family violence, and they're calling in about their spouse or their significant other, and in the crisis moment, you know, like the call gets disconnected, you can't call them back then, right?
No, we cannot, but we will contact the police immediately and let them know what information we have received. Now, normally in a situation like that, when it's domestic violence, somebody will call 911.
Okay.
But if somebody is reluctant to call 911, we will be happy to call 911 on their behalf. Also, if it's a family member that is saying that another family member may be in danger because of a spousal abuse situation, then we're happy to send that information on to law enforcement and let them know that there may be imminent danger and that they need to go to that location and investigate. So we'll be happy to do that. In fact, we have called 911 when we got a call from a woman on the phone who said that she was outside of a bar and that a guy had just been stabbed in the bar and was staggering outside of the bar and falling to the ground. And we said, well, call 911. And she said, no, I'm not supposed to be at this bar. And so we said, okay, well, we'll call 911. Just give us the information. Well, by the time the cops got there, she was long gone, but the police were able to respond to the injured person. So people, for a number of different reasons, will not call law enforcement.
And does that does that happen very often or occasionally, or is that the bulk of your calls because they're apprehensive for whatever reason?
Oh, absolutely. It's that segment of the population that will not go to the police, will not report anything. They do not want to be involved. It may be they're turning in a gang member or they may be turning in a serial killer. They just might be turning in a really bad person. But they do not want retaliation against themselves or their family members or people in their workplace. They're afraid. People are afraid.
Sue, either one of you,
yes.
Question here. Where would the general public or someone in a situation like that find your phone number? Is it posted?
Mm-hmm.
Is it, or do they have to go to your website? How do they find out about you in order to use your services?
Great. Well, we partner with a lot of communities across the country, as well as about 200,000 schools. And we work with the community members and the students. They have literature about WeTip all over their campuses and around their communities or around their offices that tell them exactly how to go about contacting WeTip. If WeTip isn't involved in your community and you know of a crime that you have to report, you can always find our 1-800-78-CRIME phone number, either from information or in the phone book.
Or on our website at WeTip.com.
Mm-hmm. So do you have to register your municipality or your school or whatnot in order to be connected on a regular basis?
Well, not necessarily. We will take information from anywhere, at any time, anyone, in any place. So all they have to do is call 1-800-78-CRIME, or they can go to WeTip.com and give their information by simply pushing the Submit a Tip button. And they can go right to the website, submit their tip, and send it. The advantage of being a WeTip member from a member community or school is
mm-hmm.
that we have the immediate people, the first responder people, to get that information directly to. And also, when you come from a member municipality, we offer a bigger reward when information leads to an arrest and conviction. But no, when you call in or you go to the website, you don't have to know anything about being a WeTip member or anything like that. You simply need to go to the website and give your information and press send, or give your information and talk to an operator. You don't have to be a member or do anything else.
And mm-hmm. it's not that we can have you register because we don't know who you are anyway.
Yeah, well, there's a question coming from the chat room, which I think is a very valid point, and I think it's interesting it would be informational for our listeners, is how do you cover yourselves legally? What are the boundaries that you have to follow, the rules that you have to follow legally, so you don't get in trouble?
Well, that's very interesting for you to say that because we are so simple. Basically, what we do is we take hearsay information, and what that entails is that if you were going to write a note and put it under the police department doorway or the principal's office doorway and say, two kids were running from the scene of a crime, and this is where you're going to find them. That's hearsay information. And so basically what WeTip does is on the bottom of all of our tip information, and this has been going on for 41 years, we have on the bottom of our tip form simply says, this is hearsay information. You can keep it, you can use it, you can follow up on it, or you can throw it in the trash. But we're just telling you that the two boys were running from the crime scene, and this is where you're going to find them. So legally, that covers us. And I have been subpoenaed hundreds and hundreds of times when somebody has been given a copy of a tip at a police department and they want to subpoena me to get more information. And I can tell them, honestly, that the only information that I have is the tip information that they're actually holding in their hand. And that usually frustrates them, but that's too bad.
Especially frustrates the defense attorneys.
Right, because their guy is never guilty, but we know that if there's information, as there was in the case of a murder up in Arrowhead, California, where two young men were doing some repair work for a woman and her elderly father, and they decided to beat the woman and strangle her and stab her. And when the father, the 87-year-old father, came running out of the house, they hit him in the head with a hammer. And then they took off in the car. Well, the tip information led to the guys who weren't real bright and took the car. And this was all basically hearsay information from the tipster who called in and said, I saw the car. I know where these guys are. And so we just simply send that off to the police. But the guy who gave the tip didn't want anything coming back on him. He just wanted to tell us where the car was and these guys that killed this woman and her elderly father. Well, this resulted in an arrest and a conviction. But again, it never went back on the guy who gave the tip. He was safe, he was anonymous, and no one could ever find out anything more about the guy who gave the tip.
So how did the courts view this? Did they say, oh, it's hearsay and we can't use it, or does it frustrate them in terms of getting a conviction? Or it helps in terms of having the information, but is there sort of a downside to that, Sue?
Well, actually, it would be, like Susan said, the same as providing a note or some basic information. We've been around so long that a lot of courts will take another piece of information that's been received, as well as a WE tip, in order to provide a search warrant. But nobody would go to court with just the hearsay information. They would come to their own investigation, and they would come to their own conclusions.
We have a case where one of our narcotics officers actually got a tip on a big meth lab in the neighborhood. He went over to simply do a knock and talk, and that's where he just knocks on the door, and he says, hey, I'd like to talk to you. Can I come in? Now, he didn't need a search warrant or anything else at that point. He just simply asked, can I come in? Now, the knucklehead who let him in wasn't real bright, and so they let him in, and in plain view, he had methamphetamine-making paraphernalia in plain sight, and they were able then to get a full warrant, and they came in, did their own investigation, got a full warrant, and busted this guy with $1.1 million worth of methamphetamine.
Whoa.
And that was from one tip.
That's extremely impressive. And are you, by and large, are you embraced by law enforcement community? Did they want people to call you, or did they always say, it's better if you call us first? Or is it a good relationship, or is it adversarial, or what?
It's a very good relationship, and they would obviously like to talk to the informants themselves. But if it's a matter of not getting the information or receiving it anonymously, they would much rather receive the information and be able to move forward. The law enforcement officers can also contact us back and tell us ask us if the informant calls back, would we ask them specific questions? And we can flag our tips so that we can do so for them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, you know, and another question that I have for you, and just there again to clarify things for our listeners, what's the difference between WE tip and Crime Stoppers? I mean, I'm familiar with Crime Stoppers somewhat, not that I know everything that they do, but I think there might be some confusion out there. What What do you do that's different than them?
Well, Crime Stoppers are franchises that are all run differently across the country, and they're operated by the police department, which means that at some point the informant can be identified. WeTip has one central location. All of the tips come together and go through one database, and we are completely and totally anonymous. And again, it goes back to that difference between confidential and anonymous. We cannot get information about an informant we don't have. By the time the informant hangs up the phone, we don't even know if they're male or female.
Whereas Crime Stoppers also operates within one small community or one large community, as the case may be, and I'll use Kansas City, Missouri, as an example. Crime Stoppers is very prominent in Kansas City, Missouri, but many, many of the outlying communities don't have Crime Stoppers. So what happens when somebody in the Kansas City area goes into one of the outlying communities that doesn't have Crime Stoppers? Should they call back into Kansas City, or do they even know the number? Or what if they move away from Kansas City and they move to Omaha? What do they do then? They don't even know the number, because usually it's a local number. And so what we do is we basically umbrella the entire United States. So there may be people that have Crime Stoppers or Crime Solvers, Secret Witness, or whatever their local program is, but WeTip is the much bigger solution, the much bigger umbrella that kind of overtakes all of it. And so when somebody moves away and they don't know who to call, they always know that they can call WeTip.
And how do you do your marketing with law? I wanted to ask a couple questions about your marketing with law enforcement. Say that, you know, in this particular town or this city, does everybody know who you are after 41 years? I mean, in law enforcement, do they know your name? Is it like name recognition, you know, like McDonald's and hamburgers?
Well, we wish they did. In many of the communities, many of the communities of California, New Jersey, Indiana, Wisconsin, Wyoming, they know WeTip. They've known WeTip for many, many years. But in some of the communities, they don't know us, and that's why Sue Mandel and I take a lot of time and go out and we speak to different groups, to different conferences. We try to get the information out there to let them know that we've been around for a very long time and that we know the processes very well. It's very difficult. Sometimes when we find out that somebody kind of crops up with a little tip program that says, well, we take tips, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, that could be a disaster, because all you have to do is not have some of the safeguards in place where people will somehow be identified or your records will be seized, and then all bets are off and somebody would be identified. We never let that happen.
And that has happened in the past with other hotlines. But I want to tell you, you know, we deal with a lot of gang activity these days, unfortunately. And in one of our communities, there was a 3-year-old little boy named Ethan that was shot and killed in a drive-by shooting. He was actually on his way to his 4th-year birthday party. And he was just collateral damage. He obviously wasn't the target. But that happened in 2006. The community put WeTip in every article that they put in the paper, trying to find out who happened or who knew about this. In 2011, WeTip received the tip that named the suspects. The police went out and did their investigation and did their due diligence. And in 2009, we received the tip. In 2010, they made the arrest. And in 2012, those gang members were sentenced and convicted.
Wow. That's tremendous. It's too bad that it takes that long, but again, you got the information, which is the important thing. It's so vital, and you got at least some resolution. I won't say closure for that little boy. And yeah, gangs. It's just an epidemic, just like, you know, intimate partner violence these days. And I'm so glad you're trying to make a dent in that.
Absolutely, Donna. You know, people just will not give information when it involves a gang because they're afraid.
Of course. But what do you have breakdowns in terms of what you, I mean, you, a couple of articles you sent me, you know, there's somebody that went in and vandalized the place and knocked out all their light bulbs. And, okay, so you get tips like that, and then you get tips about gangs, and you get tips about murderers. Are there trends? Do you get, you know, everything under the sun, or what? What's the demographic in terms of the kinds of calls you get, and which ones are the ones that are more successfully resolved than others, more petty crimes, or what?
We actually get crimes on, or tips on any type of crime, Donna. But I want to tell you, we got a tip that somebody was working in an insurance company, in an insurance office for pet insurance, and they were stealing the identities of people that were buying pet insurance. We gave the information over to police, and it turned out that the guy that was doing this, he was having things ordered on the Internet and sent to his parents' house in a different community, in a different county than where he lived.
Uh-huh.
So being multi-jurisdictional, we were able to give that information to both parties, and this guy confessed to 44,000 counts of identity theft.
Ooh, wow.
And I can tell you that as the economy has taken a downturn, we actually have gotten more tips on identity theft and fraud. We had one woman, she was working as a civilian employee at Los Angeles Police Department. And it just so happened that she had a lot of friends in the area, and she was using her position at the police department to obtain people's identities. She was also sharing them with her friend who was working at a local dealership for new cars. And so when they obtained the information on the new car transactions, her friend was stealing identities that only included the people with FICO scores over 700. They, in turn, were also sharing that information with some other friends who were committing fraud, and they were stealing people's identities and buying boats and houses and cars with your identity and mine probably out there. And so when all was said and done, there were about 12 convictions for identity theft and fraud because of this circle of folks out there who were defrauding the system. And that's just one of many, many different cases that we have helped law enforcement to solve.
Yeah, it just must be so rewarding. Is there a particular turnaround time for certain types of crimes, or does it just vary with the individual call? I mean, do you have some that are, I know you can't keep records or per se, or you depend on them calling back perhaps, but how long does it take to get one of your success stories? I mean, are there many of them that you get per week, or does it take a long time to actually, and who reports back to you that this was resolved? Is it X police department said, hey, that tip you gave us was really good and we solved it?
A lot of times that does happen, especially with our member partners. But it depends on the community and it depends on the situation. Sometimes the court system is very slow and it takes longer to get the information back. Sometimes the community has a much faster judicial system and it happens a lot quicker. When we deal with schools, we work with a lot of appropriate adjudication. And, of course, that happens very quickly.
Okay. So that's how that. Are you tailor-made for, like, communities that have been in crisis, such as, you know, Aurora, here in Connecticut, Sandy Hook, all of these different places where the communities are just reeling and they're looking for extra security. Are those the kinds of places, Sue Mandel, that you might go and say, hey, listen, I want to offer this as an option. I'm just talking out loud here to the people in Newtown, and I think that, you know, if you knew about us, we could potentially help you if you're a scared community.
We are absolutely a benefit and a great resource for those communities as well as others, but it has to be implemented. Just having the WeTip program doesn't make it effective. What happened in one of our schools was there was a school shooting. Two people were killed, 13 other people were injured, but nobody had said anything. And it turned out later, kids came forward and they said they knew what was going to happen, but they were afraid to say something because they didn't want to be the first one shot. But they had the WeTip program, but nobody had told them about it. So even though they partner with us, WeTip has to be marketed, for lack of a better word, to let people know that they have this resource available to them.
Well, how does that work? Do you have a session? You have everyone go to the auditorium, and you do a presentation for the kids or the administrators, or how does that work?
We do presentations for just about anybody, from the superintendent to the school resource officers to the students, the student leadership, the safe school ambassadors. We speak to all of them, and we want them to understand what they have and that their call might be just a piece of information to keep something from happening. Because like I said, we never know how many crimes didn't happen because somebody gave information and something didn't happen because somebody called in. And we have I have a
perfect example of that, Donna.
Okay.
We received a call that said there was going to be a high school boy that was going to come off of a local reservation in Wyoming. He was going to go to the public school, the public high school, and commit a prom night massacre that night. Now, because we work with the local police there as well as the tribal police, we got the information to both parties. They were able to work together because normally local police can't go onto a reservation. But they worked together, and they got this boy who was going to, in fact, do that. But they got him before that night, before he could do what he had planned, got him into a facility to get the help he needed, and nothing happened at the prom. I happened to be in another community not far from there about a year later, and a father came up to me and said that that was the high school that his daughter went to. And it actually took a couple days for the realization to set in what could have happened to his daughter, to his friends, and to the rest of the kids in the community that night.
I think that's so pivotal, and I want you to talk about that a little bit in terms of you're really doing a lot of prevention of crime. It's not just responding to something that's happening, and I think that's as important as confidential versus anonymous, because, you know, people are not aware of how many crimes you have helped to prevent, and we, you know, really need to get that word out, right?
That's absolutely right, Donna. And sometimes it's hard to quantify what didn't happen. But because we do get these crime tips, I want to tell you, we get these all the time. But I want to tell you about three tips that we received within 3 days of each other.
Okay.
One tip we received on June 8th, and it said that this was from Pennsylvania. He was going to go to his high school. He was going to kill as many students and faculty members as he could. And the tipster went on to tell us that the reason he was going to do this was because two of his friends had been arrested during the previous week for committing the arson on campus. Now, that didn't happen. But that very same day, we received another tip from about a New York middle school girl who was emailing her classmates and saying in those emails that she was going to, the next day on June 9th, put a gun to their heads and laugh while she pulled the trigger. That didn't happen either. And then 3 days later, we got a tip about a graduation party, and there were going to be gang members that were going to go to this party and shoot and kill two specifically named football players. And yet again, that didn't happen.
Do you market that in some way, or in your present? I know you talk about it in your presentations, but how do you let people know that information? You know, because it seems so important.
We put that information on our website and our Facebook page, and we just generally try to get the word out whenever we talk to people, as we are to you now.
Yeah.
Because a great deal of our efforts are in doing the training, and most of our funding is to pay our professionally trained operators to take those tips.
That's what I was going to ask you about staff training. What training do they have to undergo? Because, you know, what if somebody was calling and saying they wanted to commit suicide or something of that nature? I mean, or any, you know, any of these crisis things, how do they deal with that? What kind of training do they have to have?
Well, we train our operators extensively. So they go through about a six-month training process, but
mm-hmm.
they have to know exactly what to do with the tips, how to take the tips and to talk to our informants. But not only that, our operators are not trained to do suicide prevention or anything like that. What we have to do is refer them to a suicide prevention hotline. They are trained specifically to take crime information,
okay.
and they are trained to put it into the WeTip database of information and then to relay it on to law enforcement. And
mm-hmm.
That's the extent of their training. So we're very specific in what our training process is, but it is specific to taking that information and relaying it on to law enforcement.
And it's a six-month training.
Right. And we have designed our TIP forms, our TIP information forms, with the help of law enforcement so that we can obtain the maximum amount of information possible so that they can actually conduct an investigation. And let me tell you, there are some cases where somebody might have very limited information, but our TIP operators ask as much as we can to try to get what law enforcement needs. In
mm-hmm.
one case, it was just a woman who was taking information, and all she had was license plate numbers. And so she was calling us and telling us that she was in a specific city or that there was a specific city where there were cars coming and going with license numbers that she was taking down. And so we actually thought that this might not be real helpful for law enforcement, but she kept taking those license plate numbers and we kept giving that to law enforcement. And pretty soon we found out that there was actually a three-city task force and that all those license numbers were being run and that they came down on that house and found that it was filled with drugs and guns, the lights were on timers, and that this was a $49 million cocaine bust with a whole cache of weapons. And there was a lot of things going on at that house, but this woman didn't really know any of that. She just knew that something looked suspicious.
Something was going on. And
yes, exactly. So those are the kinds of things that we're not sure if it's good information or bad information, but that's not up to us. It's up to law enforcement. We just give them the information and let them work with it.
To take the ball from there, yeah. Well, I'm thinking I know of two different conferences that you might be interested in that I could talk to you off air about that might be interested in your presentations as well. But Sue Mandel, you sent me a very interesting handout that you have about tips and people that send in tips via texting, and if that is a good idea. Can you talk a little bit about that information?
Actually, I would love to. A lot of times the kids in high school and middle school, they have their smartphones and they want to use them. They text faster than I can read or I can talk. But
right.
Unfortunately, there isn't a way to keep the texted tips anonymous yet. They may come up with something in the future, but they haven't yet. And so what we've done to enable the kids to be able to use their smartphones is created a QR code that can be scanned. It's on posters, mouse pads, literature, all over the place. They can scan that. It takes them directly into our mobile tip form, which is an abbreviated version of our regular online tip form. But because it goes through our website, which is firewalled and encrypted, it keeps them safe and anonymous. It's just a few questions. It's mostly drop-down menus, a couple very short fill-ins, but allows the kids to use the medium that they want, but still remain safe.
Wow, that the technology at work.
That's right, because there's nothing more important than keeping the identity of our tipsters safe. That's what makes WeTip who we are.
Yeah, that's part of your ingrained in your mission, it sounds like. Do you get the full gamut of all kinds of people, whether it be kids or elderly people or professionals? Who are tipsters, and what makes a good tipster versus a bad tipster? I'm just wondering.
Well, there is no such thing as a bad tipster. We don't really know who the people are that are contacting us, but obviously the ones that have the most information are the most helpful. But we do get a gamut all across the board. We get voices that sound older and younger. We get voices that have different dialects and different languages or accents. And we get voices that are whispering in the middle of the night because they're giving information, but they don't want anybody to hear them. And that's okay, too. You know,
well, how do you make them feel comfortable with doing this with you? Is there like a certain, is there a little bit of a scripted message you give them in the beginning other than saying, please don't say my name, your name or whatever?
Well, you know, what we do is we have to take each tip kind of individually. And I can tell you, being with WeTip for 35 years, I began as a tip operator, and one of my first homicide tip actually resulted in an arrest and a conviction. And this was a woman who called in the middle of the night, and she was very soft-spoken. You knew that she came from a home where there was a lot of a fear involved. And she called in a very soft whisper and said, I know where they buried the body. And she actually knew the men in her home were it was a gang-related homicide, and they had killed an individual for drug reasons, and they had actually buried his body behind the train station. She was able to give me all of the information about what was going on, where the body was buried, where the drugs were kept. They were hidden out by the tree in the yard. She told us everything. But again, you kind of have to go with the feelings of the informant, what's going on, and
build a rapport.
Yes, and relay the information back to her that she's safe, that no one's going to come and get her. And she gave information on everything, but you could tell she was one of the silent people in the home. She kept her head down. She did what she was supposed to do, and she told us everything about these guys who had killed people and who had hidden the drugs and everything. So it kind of can't be a canned speech. It has to be something where you build a rapport with your informant.
And you just get a feel for it, and each person that's trained has their own way about accomplishing it, right? Is it your goal to try to keep them on the phone for as long as possible to get as much information?
It's our goal to try to get as much information. Staying on the phone doesn't necessarily mean a lot of information. It may just be that we have to let them know that they're safe and that they can give the information that they have.
Donna, there's something that I would really like to mention before we finish up, and that's about bullying.
Yes. It's about what?
Bullying in the school. You know, we're talking about a lot of crimes with regard to property, life in danger, all kinds of stuff like that, drugs. But it's important for people to know that bullying is a huge, huge issue, and that almost every single school shooting has happened because the perpetrator either was currently being bullied or had been bullied in their past. And so these kids have to know that they have a way to give information, especially the witnesses. The witnesses are afraid to say something also because they don't want to be the next target. but they can give information to WETIP, and we can pass that along to the schools and to the school resource officers so that they can address the situation and deal with it before there's another horrific incident and before there's another Sandy Hook.
Right, and these are schools that have bona fide, credible bullying programs, not just somebody who reported to the principal and whatever, right? That, you're right on target with that because, you know, Adam Lance was, you know, a powder keg, and no one recognized that, and you know we'll be forever sorry about that. So you are so right about that, and I'm sure I see the value of this, and I'd like to see your signs all over my state. I mean, send me some materials. I'll put them. Are we allowed to post them different places, or you have to get permission from certain places to be able to do that, or how does that work?
Well, if it's a private business, you would need their permission. But we will gladly send you some materials to post them. But, you know, in our 41-year history, we have taken over half a million tips, and we've paid over $1 million in rewards. We've had law enforcement to seize over $320 million in illegal drugs and narcotics. And when it comes to convictions, we have over a 1-in-2 ratio for every arrest. For every 2 arrests, we have at least 1 conviction when we've been notified of the results.
Wow, that's a really a record to be proud of. Tell us a little bit. We still got about 8 minutes. Tell us a little bit about the reward program. Now, it's not every crime that you hear of that has a reward attached to it. But is that the impetus for people calling in on a lot of the crimes, or how does that work?
Well, our program includes a reward of up to $1,000. We ask the informant at the end of the questions, when we've gotten all the information we can, if they're interested in the reward if there's a conviction. And if they say yes, we give them a 3-part fictitious code name in addition to their case number. That is the only way they can respond to us when it's time to pay that reward. When we get information back from law enforcement or from the school officials that there has been a case closure and that there's been a conviction, we can pay that cash reward. The amount is dependent upon how serious the crime was and how helpful the tip was. So we work with our investigators to help us rate that tip and give us a recommendation. Then it's time for the informant to call us back because we can't reach them, but they can call us back and tell us where they want to pick up their reward. It can literally be anywhere within the nation. We send a money order to a postmaster in the community that the informant has requested. That postmaster turns the money order into cash, and the informant has a 30-day window to go in with nothing but their 3-part code name that they got in the beginning of this process, and they pick up an envelope with their cash reward. We have kept safe and anonymous for over 41 years, taking their crime tip and paying them their cash reward.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you've got the whole system all figured out. I just, when you were talking earlier with respect to, well this particular school was enrolled with your program, but they didn't use it. How does that happen? I mean, if they go to the trouble to subscribe to it, how did that happen?
Well, a lot of times people think that it's a very difficult program to implement. But it's very turnkey. All they need to do is get the information out on the campus with the posters or metal signs, or we do incident flyers. We do all the rest of the work. So we might have a superintendent of a school that can see the benefit and know how much this can help his students. He'll enroll and get the program, but then the people on the campuses may not realize how simple it is in order to make it effective. And so they don't do anything because they're too busy. And that's really one of the biggest tragedies of all.
Are you on college campuses?
Oh, yes. We're on college campuses and universities across the country as well.
Yeah.
Some people just getting out the website at WETIP.com or getting out that QR code, and you can find that QR code on the website and just scan it with your smartphone and check it out. It's at WETIP.com. So simple, so easy, and everything you need to know is right on that website to find out about WETIP.
Well, yeah, that's good. So give us your contact. So you have the 800 number. You have the WeTip with the website. And then if people across the nation who are listening to this show, either now or later, are interested in having the information about their community, what's your advice about it?
They can contact me. I'm Sue Mandel. They can contact the WeTip offices at 909-987-5005. My extension is 250, and I would be more than happy to talk to them about how to go about this and bring it to their communities or their schools.
They can also find us at WeTip.com under Contact Us, and they can contact us by way of the website and get a hold of Sue Mandel also at that site. Or you can go to the WeTip Anonymous Crime Hotline on Facebook and request information or request that we contact you through the Facebook site as well. Like us at WeTip Anonymous Crime Hotline on Facebook. We would love to just keep you updated on what's going on with WeTip via Facebook.
But do not leave a tip on Facebook.
Never. You got to be safe. You got to be anonymous. And that's
right.
Why you do it on the website or at 1-800-78-CRIME.
Yeah, well, I'd like to put your logo and your number on my website in the near future. Maybe we'll do that, and I hope that will help, too. I was just wondering, what in doing this for as many years as you have, Sue and Susan, what have you both learned over the years that's been the most valuable in terms of performing your job and for potential crime victims and what you've done to help? What is there some kernel of, you know, knowledge that you've learned from doing this for so long that you were surprised about?
Actually, it's not really surprised, but the feeling that I get when we find out that we have averted a tragedy is indescribable. And we do take millions thousands and thousands of tips on all types of crimes. But when we know for a fact, like the boy in South Dakota who put on his Facebook page about his blood rushing and he was so excited and that his biggest goal and ambition was to become the world's most infamous sociopath, he never got to do that because of a tip. And when you find out there are things that did not happen, then it's just absolutely amazing because we never really know what didn't happen because of
that. Well, I think that's the most powerful message to be closing out. Delilah, did you have some other comments you wanted to make or questions toward the end here?
Well, I just doing a fantastic job. And, you know, you answered my questions about how to bring your services to the community that we all live in and to the schools. And I can see, you know, many corporations getting involved with so much violence in the workplace has become rampant as well as so many other issues, so many other crimes. And I can see, you know, where this would definitely help in that situation as well.
We're also a tax write-off because we're a 501c3. And if a corporation wants to provide the program for their community, we can be a tax deduction for them, and we can give them their internal program as well.
Because
that's wonderful.
This economy, that tips have increased and the donations to WeTip have decreased, and we are in desperate need.
Are you?
Oh, absolutely. We need some financial support, especially as the fraud tips have increased, the violent crimes, the drug tips. We have seen an increase so much in the past few years. And again, because the economy has decreased, we always need financial support.
Well, we'll try to promote that as best we can. And like I say, have you there. And I'll talk to you off air. Maybe we can do some other projects or get you, you know, in with some other people that we know in terms of conferences, et cetera, okay? We're going to have to close out now. I want to say thank you so much, Sue and Susan. It's been a very informative and lively evening, as always, and I hope this is just the start of our relationship. And I want to tell everyone, thank you so much for listening. Please go to Imagine
publicity.com and DonnaGore.com. And watch for the blog and podcast tomorrow, and we will see you next week with another exciting show. So thank you, Delilah. Thank you, Sue and Sue, and we'll talk to you soon. Good evening.
Okay.